Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. Today on the program, we're breaking with format a little bit. Usually on the Sounds and Sights of Cinema, we primarily keep the focus on the music itself and keep the talk to a minimum. But today, we're going to be in conversation with a gentleman named Dave Johnson. And Dave, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Always a good time, Clark.
Well, I am very pleased and excited to have you on the Sounds and Sights of Cinema. And you mentioned that you wanted to come on the show to talk a little bit about the score for The Dark Knight Rises, which you said impacted you in, I believe you put it, in a physiological way.
As weird as it sounds, yeah, I would agree with that. And maybe some of that has to do with the newly refurbished sound system that Cinemagic had installed in its theaters, you know, because that was pretty cranked up. But like it was one of those things where the soundtrack overlaid on the particular action scenes, and you know, just what struck me is it was the section where Bane's plan kind of kicks into gear, you know, and there's this whole stretch where Zimmer just kind of unloads. And to the point where I turned to my dad, I was like, "Boy, this is pretty tense," because I was kind of feeling that, you know, just kind of feeling that that buzz from you know both what was happening on screen, but also the soundtrack too.
Yeah, I will admit that the soundtrack for The Dark Knight Rises, at least in my screening, felt atypically thunderous. But I
it did feel thunderous. Yes, I agree with that.
I partially attributed that though to the fact that I was seeing it in IMAX, and in general, their sound system is just sort of overwhelming with most of the stuff I've seen in that format. But it's certainly a big. You could say overbearing score to some extent.
I totally agree. But, I mean, it's not subtle. I would totally agree with that. It is, and I mentioned this off, you know, before we hit record here, but it's an oppressive score in some parts. You know, I mean, it really, again, whether it's too much or whether it was designed to kind of transmit what was going down within the film. You know, kind of how Gotham was being turned inside out here. You know, that's probably between Zimmer and Nolan, I suppose. But it had the desired effect on me, I think. I was pretty on edge. It was a white knuckler for me.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about this score is that Hans Zimmer is doing it all by himself.
Yeah, right, because, James Newton Howard did the other stuff?
Right. He worked with Hans Zimmer on the first two movies, and before listening to Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, they sounded basically to me like Hans Zimmer scores. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really spot much of James Newton Howard's influence. But now that he's gone, I can sort of hear a little better what he might have brought to those other two movies. And that is maybe a greater emphasis on melody and on somewhat gentler, more introspective material. There's not a lot of that in The Dark Knight Rises.
There's barely any. I mean, I will definitely grant you. This really isn't a movie of somber reflection, you know.
No.
It's kind of a balls out thing, and it's, I mean, just looking at the, that kind of male chorus that populates a lot of the, you know, that chant, rather, that you see, I mean, that kind of tells you what they were going. It's almost like primal, right?
Yeah.
Which, not to, you know, Bane is kind of a primal guy, at least the way he, you know, he attacks Batman. Whereas, I agree with you. Like The Dark Knight, I mean, you had moments. You had the Harvey Dent moments, which were certainly more introspective. I mean, the Joker score was harsh, but it was. I mean, do you know how the Joker score was? I don't know what instrument was used, but it felt like nails on a chalkboard. You know?
It was a whole host of things, just kind of a cacophony of sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned that the theme for Bane is kind of primal, and I agree, but I think the theme for the Joker is, too, in an entirely different sort of way, just this single relentless note, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Bane, I suppose, befitting his sort of grandiose plan, has this more, kind of epic choral thing going on.
Absolutely, which you see pretty explicitly in the opening scene where we meet Bane, which, again, is intense. I mean, it's, you know, the criticisms I've heard about the film, and I know we've talked about this like on Facebook and whatnot, but
right.
How it really, I mean, it's pretty, it's big. It's big, and, you know, maybe is it too big? Is it too over the top? I mean, and that first sequence with the plane and that, when that music really kicks in, I mean, that could go either way. If someone, that's a criticism for someone watching the movie thinking it's too over the top, too comic booky, I could see that. For me personally, it kind of got me in that, like, oh, here we go. Yeah, here we go. type of,
yeah.
You know, but again, I make no bones that I am anything but a Batman Kool-Aid drinker.
Well,
as long as Clooney is behind the mask, I'm pretty much down with most things.
Uh-huh. Well, I would say I'm a fan of the series in general, and I liked this movie quite a bit. I liked it more in terms of its place as the third part of a larger story than as a self-contained movie. But one of the interesting things about this score to me, and I guess this is my primary frustration with the score, and I wanted to get your take on this, is that from the beginning, Hans Zimmer had indicated that he had planned to basically kind of evolve and grow these themes that he developed in Batman Begins.
Okay.
And, you know, if you listen to the music in Batman Begins, it's there's not a lot of, you know, full-blown themes being played. It's a lot of stuff that feels like it's about to launch into a big theme at any moment, kind of anticipatory sort of music. And it feels like that's sort of the trend which continued all the way through the score. I never felt like the themes that were introduced really went anywhere or changed as Batman changed. Like, Hans Zimmer was talking about how before he felt that the sort of two-note theme for Batman that you hear was sort of what was the word that he used? Basically, he was saying that it sounded very uncertain early on, and that now in The Dark Knight Rises it sounded more like a definitive statement. I don't really hear that. I kind of hear the same two-note thing, but what do you think?
I agree. I mean, as someone who's listened to all three soundtracks pretty, you know, on loop pretty frequently, I've been listening to Dark Knight Rises as well. I would agree with that. I don't see that evolution. I'll tell you what evolution I do see, and maybe I'm out here, but what struck me about Batman Begins was that the score was more of a supporting character. Like, I just felt it was kind of in the background and really set the tone, set the ambiance. I thought in The Dark Knight, it kind of stepped up a little more, especially with the Joker's theme, you know, and some of the more personal themes that had to do with Harvey, like we had mentioned.
Right.
And some of the, you know, and the action, you know, the action theme. You know, when the score in the Batman, to me, in the Batman movies, the first two at least, when the score really, like, got into the driver's seat was during a lot of the action stuff. Even though, ironically, the big centerpiece action scene in Dark Knight, you know, the chase after Harvey Dent, that was largely score free. I think the score only kicked in when the Batpod took off. So,
yeah.
And I thought that was pretty well done. And then it kind of went into more traditional big score at the very end. You know, and the fairies was the more of the tense, that one note type of stuff, and then when Batman's doing his siege on the building, it kind of goes into more full throated. So I always looked at, and Batman Begins for sure. It didn't really have that recognizable theme to me that, you know, Elfman's score did, for example, in the original Batman. You know, so I always looked at what Zimmer was doing as, and this is just me personally, it was just that in that background, kind of supporting, kind of setting, serving the story and serving Nolan's setting. In The Dark Knight Rises, for good or bad, up or down, I felt like the score really got like a job promotion. You know, it really got promoted to like being a driver of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, particularly, you know, when Bane's plan gets rolling.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with you in a sense in that it's a lot more prominent, as we mentioned. It's
right.
Sort of overwhelming and has a much bigger presence. But just musically, I guess part of what's bugging me about it is I don't feel like the score for The Dark Knight Rises really had a whole lot to say about much of the movie. Now, I do think the Bane material is very interesting and works really well. It's one of the more unique themes I think he's come up with over the course of this series. But I don't know. A lot of what the rest of the score is doing feels like it's just kind of going through the motions and recycling stuff that appeared in earlier scores without really doing enough new things to it to really make it stand out.
I guess I can see that. Maybe I'm just focusing on the Bane stuff because it was so prominent in your face. You know?
And
like,
it does.
That's what has stuck with me. Like I couldn't even tell you, and I've been listening to this score. I haven't really been looking at the names of the songs. I just have it playing in background while I'm working. You know, but I couldn't even tell you if Selena Kyle has a theme to herself.
She does.
Okay, so.
She does, but it comes and goes pretty quickly. It's featured a little more in the movie than it is on the soundtrack album.
Okay.
But yeah, it's there.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that would kind of support what you're saying as well. So I would, I'm probably just bewitched more by the big bombast. And I just felt that out of the three movies, it was in this one. Out of all the bombastic scenes in all three movies, it was this one where I thought the score was utilized specifically to generate more of that visceral reaction.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned in The Dark Knight, there's that one really memorable sequence where the score kind of goes away during that action scene. And it's striking. Precisely because there's so much music in all of these movies, it takes kind of the modern approach of having music everywhere all the time.
But,
so when it disappears, you really do notice. And then in The Dark Knight Rises, there's a similar sequence. There's still music, but I would say it serves a similar function during the scene in which the kid is singing the national anthem.
Yeah.
Right, because it is so quiet and serene in contrast to just this big, loud movie that surrounds that scene.
That's right. The difference being, though, that there's really, I mean, that's kind of the deep breath before the plunge. It's just
right.
a Gandalf saying, you know? Whereas why the Dark Knight was striking was, I mean, yeah, he had giant chases, he had the Joker firing RPGs, he had gunfire, you know, he had the biggest... Like, I would argue of all three movies, that extended stunt sequence was probably the most impressive.
Yeah,
it had no music behind it. So, and I thought it was effective, and I thought it made this score when it kicked in that much more effective. You know, it was just well timed because the bat pod was a cool reveal, right? So I thought I thought the beats really matched up well with the story going on.
Yeah. And then on the Star Spangled Banner scene, I saw in the liner notes for The Dark Knight Rises, Christopher Nolan saying that was Hans Zimmer's idea to have a boy soprano, because apparently they'd been talking about having some big celebrity appear in that scene. Well, I don't know if they're going to have Garth Brooks or somebody else.
That's right, yeah.
But it certainly wouldn't have had the impact.
Probably not Macy Gray from Spider-Man. I don't think she should get the phone call.
No, probably not. But... yeah, very interesting.
That is interesting. And a quick digression too. And I don't know the answer to this. Has Zimmer done the score for all of Nolan's other films?
Not all of them. The only other one that he scored is Inception which for me is still his best score.
I love Inception. Yeah, I think Inception is fantastic.
Yeah. The earlier stuff,
like The Prestige. Scored,
yeah, that was scored by a guy named David Julian, I think is one of these sort of lower tier composers who kind of got sourced out when Christopher Nolan got pretty big.
Okay, gotcha.
But honestly, I don't think he really brought a whole lot. If you asked me to kind of hum a bar of anything from The Prestige, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
I love that movie, it doesn't really have
as much as it. As much as I love the Batman movies, I still think The Prestige is Nolan's best made film. Mm-hmm. That's something even though like The Dark Knight might be my favorite, but. Yeah, you're right. I couldn't even tell you the theme. You're right.
The Prestige is one of those movies, too, that I kind of have appreciated more and more over the years as I've gone back to it. Because the first time I saw it, I liked it. But I don't know. It kind of reveals new things each time I return to it.
Yeah.
As opposed to Inception, which is a movie I still really like, but which kind of tends to start falling apart a little more the closer you look at it.
Yeah, I think the smoke and mirrors, kind of catches up to Inception a bit. And, going to The Dark Knight Rises as well, I would, this is just looking at the film in general, and Dan Mancini and I did a little objection episode talking about this, but, I think there's certainly smoke and mirrors at play there,
Yeah.
But I just kind of default to, maybe it's a cop-out, but... Like seeing the forest for the trees kind of thing. So, I guess you could nitpick it, I guess, but I guess it just wouldn't be as much fun, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's why The Prestige kind of is, that's very I mean, he's really telling the story in crazy ways. Like, he's got, like, three flashbacks. You know, it's like a flashback to a flashback to a flashback, which is why that's always impressed me.
One of the things which really surprised me about The Dark Knight Rises is just how messy it feels. And I don't think that's a bad thing, necessarily. I think it's supposed to a certain extent, because Gotham is in chaos. But Christopher Nolan generally makes these movies that feel like they're just planned within an inch of their life. They're like clockwork.
Yeah.
And this one just is kind of a big, sprawling, messy thing, and I wasn't really expecting that from him.
I think that's accurate. I think that's an accurate call on that. I do. I think, and you know, maybe I kind of like that too, because, like Inception, as much as I enjoyed it, part of me wanted, like, part of me, it felt like the draft of the script was like 10, 12, it was like he's on draft 12 or 13. Just always going back to kind of connect as many dots.
Work out the continuity issues.
Work out all the continuity issues right around difficulties. Almost sterilize it, you know, almost sterilize it. So I guess, and maybe that kind of goes, and I don't want to, you know, not overthinking anything, because I think it's a valid criticism if you didn't really like, if someone, you know, not you, but if someone didn't like The Dark Knight Rises and they thought it was too messy, I think that'd be valid. I think it worked for me because of what you were saying, because of the chaos, and I guess going back to that primal, just that primal feel, like the Bane Batman fight to me was just a brutal primal thing, and probably the best choreographed fight scene in the entire trilogy too.
Well, and it correlates to this a little bit too, because Batman's a character who's all about controlling his surroundings, you know, and this it's so completely the opposite of what Batman usually does, taking place in broad daylight.
Right, right.
In the midst of this huge crowd. It's the ultimate anti-Batman setting here.
Yeah, right, true.
But,
true. That's
it works really nicely. Yeah. But it's an interesting movie. It certainly wasn't the movie I expected it to be. That's not entirely a bad thing, but...
But it's the one you deserved, right?
Right. It's the one we deserved. Yeah. It's more of a superhero retrospect than I expected it to be, really.
I think so.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing. And I mean, I think it's ultimately a really terrific Batman story. It has its flaws and its weak points here and there. I do think The Dark Knight still holds up for me as the most interesting movie on its own terms. And musically, too, I think that's the score where I really kind of was thinking to myself, okay, he's really doing something here. And it's probably the one I'll be returning to the most. Though The Dark Knight Rises has its moments, but for me it feels too much like a remix of what's come before without bringing enough material of its own to the table.
I think for me The Dark Knight is that movie that I don't think – and it's one of my favorite movies, and I think one of the best in a long – you know, just a great, great movie, one of my all-time favorites. But I think it benefited from – as much as I did enjoy Batman Begins, if you look at Batman Begins and the structure of that movie, it plays out very much like almost a standard issue superhero movie. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, there's some cool themes in it, and it's Batman. And that always – if it's Batman, it always kind of gives you a leg up on the daredevils of the world, right? It kind of gives you that, you know, the Batman mythos and all that. There's a lot built into that already that you can you can work with. But, you know, looking in retrospect, I just think that, you know, it's of the three movies, and Dan and I were talking about this, like that's the safest one to me. That feels the safest movie. You know, it's like it hits all the beats, you know, the origin story and the big action scene at the end, you know, and then The Dark Knight kind of like it kind of changed the tectonics of the series, you know?
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden, you know, I kind of, the other way I've been talking about it to me is like once the pencil trick happens in The Dark Knight, you know, it's like all of a sudden the rules kind of change and anything can happen.
Right.
You know? Like to me, I felt safe watching The Batman Begins, whatever. But The Dark Knight I think credit to everything from Ledger's performance to the score. I think the score kind of puts that unsettled feeling there, you know? And I think Dark Knight Rises is an extension of The Dark Knight in that fact that, you know, the ground under your feet is very unstable and anything can happen, really.
Yeah.
But it's more of an evolutionary jump than kind of the revelation that Dark Knight was, right?
And in retrospect, Heath Ledger's performance maybe foreshadows The Dark Knight Rises to some extent, because it's still a very controlled movie, but his performance is the one just sort of wildly unpredictable element of that.
True.
And then in The Dark Knight Rises, you basically have the whole thing embracing that sort of mindset.
Right, right.
But, yeah, it's an interesting series, and one which I think will hold up quite well over time.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, too, you mentioned a movie that you saw that I still haven't seen, called The Raid, which you said had a similar impact on you, at least in terms of the way the music functioned.
Sure, right, right. And I, as much as I did like The Dark Knight Rises and the Avengers, you know, another movie I enjoyed a lot, The Raid is something that it probably stapled me to my seat more than anything else this year. It's actually a, you know, Sony had bought the rights as a movie made in Indonesia by this filmmaker and actor duo who did a movie called Merentau, which I actually reviewed for DVD Verdict. A decent movie that had a lot of cool stuff in it, but I mean, ironically, and we're not on the same level of Christopher Nolan and Batman, I understand that. But ironically, one of those, their second movie just like capitalized on the promise of the first, you know, and really kind of upped the ante in a big way. So, and this is just kind of, this is a straight martial arts action film about this, like this Indonesian SWAT team that go into this crime-ridden apartment building that's lorded over by a gangster. He locks them in, and it's just a floor-by-floor survival shoot fest, you know, punch in the head fest type of thing. And it's insane. Like, even if there was zero score, it would still be crazy. But when, I think, you know, when Sony got a hold of it, they had Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park do the score for it. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't even tell you what the original soundtrack was. And not being a huge Linkin Park fan, really, I was a little bit of trepidation going in, but I mean, he really kind of cranks out this, it's very harsh, again, very overwhelming, very, you know, very loud, but I think it's well done. I think it fits kind of the craziness that's going on. And it's that, again, I think it aided in the effect it had on me, like when I left the theater the first time I saw it, like I was literally like shaking because of the adrenaline. That,
wow.
I mean, just, and that's a testament to the staging of the film, the performances by the actors. And these are like, you know, these aren't the Western, these aren't the Hollywood heroes, you know, who quick edits to make it look like they're in this fight scene, you know. These guys are just, you got a camera just tracking their movements and they're just pulling off this crazy stuff. And Shinoda, I think, did a pretty good job. You can listen to cuts of it. I know you can get the CD, but you can listen to cuts of it for free on Mike Shinoda's website. And there's a particular scene, like a fight that happens in a drug lab. It comes towards the end of the film, so you got a lot of build-up going, and it just cranks. And, I mean, it's one of those, another one of those physiological effect type of scores. And then there's just a big, huge two-on-one fight scene that culminates the film. I mean, probably the most amazing fight scene I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of crazy stuff, but this one is amazing.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those things that just comes to a crescendo, and the soundtrack wisely builds up to that. So, and it pays, everything pays off nicely. So props to Shinoda for putting together something that probably could have been like throwaway rap rock, you know, Limp Bizkit stuff. But I think, I think he gave it some thought and it didn't cheapen the film for me at all. I mean, it's violent. It's very violent. And it's not for kids, obviously, but as far as straight action movie making, I've never seen anything like it.
Are there any other scores for you that come to mind that have had a similar sort of physiological effect on you?
Let me think about that. You go first, though.
That's a good question. I would say quite possibly some of the bigger moments in the Lord of the Rings scores.
Good.
Would
good one.
Suit that bill for me, just because it's so huge, and those movies are so emotionally involving anyway,
right,
so that
right.
may play, you know, a big part in it. But that's definitely one that springs to mind. Going to the Batman series for a moment, I wouldn't say in general that they've had that effect on me, but there is one scene that springs to mind from The Dark Knight, and it's the scene when Batman is going to rescue either Rachel or Harvey Dent. And they sort of come to this horrifying realization that one of them isn't going to make it. And the music in that scene, towards the end of that scene, suddenly takes on a dramatically different mood from the rest of that score. The score kind of tends to feature a lot of these low, rumbling notes, and all of a sudden it gets very high and very intense and very emotional in a way that that music in that series as a whole just generally doesn't. And it's very striking, and it really had a pretty big impact on me when I saw that for the first time, and still does when I go back to it.
But, I think you're getting at something interesting, because I think there's probably different types of effects, those scores.
Right.
So, I mean, there's some that taps into kind of the emotional, you know, the emotional weight of that particular scene.
Yeah.
And the music, and that music really taps into that. And then there's like, then there's, again, I'm overusing the word, I know, but that primal, visceral stuff that's just, you're sitting there, you're watching a well made, you know, well done action sequence. That's designed, obviously, to kind of, you know, kind of get you into it, right? So it's built to be that way. But the music, for whatever reason, really kind of gets the adrenal glands pumping a little bit.
And you know, now that you mention that, there is another one I have to mention, and I'm going to sort of shamefully show my artsier side for a second here.
Go for it.
But Melancholia, directed by Lars von Trier, which I'm not really a fan of Lars von Trier in general, but the movie has a scene towards the end which features a piece of classical music which is presented in such loud, overpowering fashion, you feel like you're vibrating when it's done. It's just, it's a huge piece, and if you see it with a good sound system or in a movie theater or something like that, it definitely has a raw physical effect on you because it's presented that way. Which isn't something you would expect to see in that sort of movie. It's the sort of thing you expect, as you mentioned, from a Batman movie or, you know, some big epic. But it really is a pretty overpowering moment there.
Yeah. You know, and actually, I think you got it right the first one. I think Lord of the Rings is just populated with that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And the shift that Shore does, you know, like, so the stuff at the end of the Fellowship where it's, you've got this sustained, you know, awesomely choreographed, you know, battle scene of orcs versus our heroes, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And that's just kind of, so you're into that for all the reasons of the storytelling, but, you know, Howard Shore really kind of kicks into that. He kicks into the sweeping, you know, grand action themes, right? But throughout that, you're just getting, you know, when Boromir shows up, right? One of my all-time favorite moments of the whole trilogy. When he kind of embarks on his little redemption there, you know, I thought the music really served it well up to the end where he tones it down, right, considerably, and he kind of has his last stand. So that to me is like a great amalgam of all that stuff, the emotion, the adrenaline from just an awesome action sequence, and then just punctuated by perfect musical choices.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating score for the trilogy as a whole. It's a remarkable musical work. I mean, what, 10, 12 hours of music somewhere there.
Is that one of your favorites?
I would say so, yeah. It's an overwhelming thing. It's hard to sit down and, you know, listen to the complete extended editions as much as I would like to.
That's right.
They have, like, these four-disc releases.
It's hard to watch them, too. Yeah, it's hard to watch them.
And I love them, yeah, but I feel like if I'm going to do one, I might as well make it a marathon, and it's a whole day, and so, yeah. Wow. love that score.
So, yeah, I'm trying, I guess, you know, and beyond that, I just think I could, you know, just the stuff that shaped my youth, right? So, so obviously the Star Wars stuff, you know, I've espoused, I think on this program, obviously I've espoused my love for
Willow,
right? I could hum the different action bars of the wagon chase scene. I remember I would record it off the VCR and even listen to it just because it was so cool. So, but that again, you know, is that objectively great, you know, orchestral arrangements? I don't know, but I could tell you that it stuck with me and it was unique enough that I remembered it. And
Speaking of which, I don't know if you happened to see the new Spider-Man movie.
I did see the new Spider-Man movie, yes.
Okay, I really liked James Horner's score. A lot of people didn't, but I found it just sort of refreshingly old-fashioned in a way. It was the sort of score you would have gotten for a superhero movie made in the 80s or early 90s that you don't really hear anymore. And I found it kind of charming, but some people didn't really care for it. I was curious to get your take on it.
Yeah, as a whole, I kind of forgot about the movie, to be honest. As a whole, I thought it was one of those movies where I was watching it. I was like, "Hey, this is pretty cool." And then when I kind of left, and when I, you know, kind of left the spell of the movie theater, it didn't really stick with me. But I do remember, I do remember sharing a similar reaction to that. Like, well, this kind of feels like a throwback.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I'm with you on that. I mean, the movie as a whole didn't do too much for me, just because. I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of played out with Spider-Man. Who knows? But I think I would agree with that.
I'll confess to being a little played out with superhero origin stories in general.
I agree with that. I can't. What was it that? I'm trying to think of a movie that really. Oh, Green Lantern, which is a clunker anyway. Understood.
Right.
But the origin story wasn't even that interesting, you know?
Yeah.
And it hit every single origin trope you could hit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Batman, obviously Warner Brothers isn't going to give up on the franchise here. So whatever iteration it takes next, I really hope that we don't get an origin story, you know? I mean, when I look at Nolan's trilogy, I'm convinced that the trilogy is more about Bruce Wayne even than Batman, you know? The question he's always looking at is, why would this man dress up as a bat, right? And to me, Bruce Wayne is the main – whereas Bruce Wayne is like an afterthought, really, in all the Batman movies prior to that, I thought, you know?
Well,
so
at this point in various mediums, the Bruce Wayne / Batman origin story has to pretty much be the most told origin story.
I agree.
So I don't think there's anybody out there at this point, especially after a more definitive take like Batman Begins, that see it again. I made the mistake the other day of watching it wasn't really a mistake because it was all right, but the DC animated movie Batman Year One, based on the Frank Miller comic.
Right.
Which is, you know, a classic comic book storyline, but the half of that movie focusing on Batman's origins just felt so tedious, just because it's sort of been strip mined by so many people over the years and been there, done that. But
that may be my main complaint with the new Spider-Man movie. You know, do we need to see that? It's gonna be interesting. Now it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Man of Steel, right? So we got the Man of Steel on the horizon,
which is certainly seeming to be doing an origin thing all over again.
I think, and. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I was thinking about this recently, and I know our conversation is leaping into wider things here, but I think there's like been only one decent Superman movie I've seen out of the five. You know, like, even I was rewatching Superman 2 recently, and I remember holding that near and dear, and I haven't seen the Donner cut, but I just think that the theatrical one really kind of stinks when I really think about it.
I can't disagree with that. I used to like Superman 2 when I was younger, revisiting it just doesn't hold up.
No.
And I think Superman Returns has some good ideas. I just think it doesn't really pull them off very well.
And the only thing I remember about Superman Returns is he's apparently a deadbeat dad, and he fights a giant rock at the end. You know, okay. So Nolan's trilogy to me works because I think he gets as close to the compelling core of Batman, you know, that anyone has, you know, that the whole dichotomy, Bruce Wayne, Batman, what is the hero, you know, the tortured soul, his code that he has, you know, like as much as I enjoy Tim Burton's movies on a certain level. I mean, that really wasn't Batman, you know, Batman doesn't fly around in his plane carpet bombing bad guys, you know?
Right. No, I mean, it was a Batman themed Tim Burton fantasy.
Pretty much. And I had a good time with it. And so, you know, no hard feelings, but, I think Nolan really got close to what makes Batman tick and makes him such a compelling character. I don't think since Donner's first Superman, which, you know, it's probably, you know, I haven't seen it in a while, actually, which I should probably rectify. I've only seen pieces of it, but I don't know who's really kind of gotten to a lot of the Superman stuff, like the outsider trying to fit in, but with godlike powers and balancing that. You know, to me, that's compelling stuff. I mean, and so I'm kind of actually pretty thirsty for that story. So I'll forgive another origin story if it's the Man of Steel and if it's Superman done right. Like, to the point where I probably got into Smallville a little more than I probably should have, but because they were kind of even flirting with some of those themes.
Sure.
You know, in kind of a cheesy manner, albeit. So it'll be interesting to see. And obviously, Snyder, what's Zack Snyder going to see too?
I still don't know what to make of Zack Snyder as a director.
Right?
I still like Watchmen quite a bit, but he seems like a director who's pretty much as good as his material, and I don't really know what he'll be working with here.
That's a good point. I think that's a good point.
But yeah, it'll definitely be interesting, and I do hope they can get it right. Really, since Superman the movie, the one Superman thing which has really kind of caught my attention is the comic Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman. I think is terrific. Just kind of a great portrait of that character, but it's a difficult character to do right. So yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Well, we have somehow plowed through about 40 minutes.
Not bad. Not bad, right.
Yeah, but any final thoughts for our Sounds and Sights of Cinema listeners out there before we start to wrap things up and maybe feature a little bit of the aforementioned Dark Knight Rises score
definitely.
So people can judge for themselves?
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure talking about this stuff. It's, I probably don't do as deep a dive as you do, I kind of respond to scores the way, you know, with really kind of like straight Pavlov's dog kind of responses, you know. And I think in that way, that's why I think Dark Knight Rises resonated with me more. But it's always interesting to kind of get the insider point of view on all this stuff. So
speaking of an insider point,
yeah.
Secret about the Sounds and Sights of Cinema, which is that the reason I don't talk so much on the program is because that if I did actually speak for an hour straight, people would see how little I actually know, which they may already at this point. But the music is much smarter than I am. So anyway, Dave, I do really appreciate you taking the time to do this, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Definitely. Good times, Zach. Good times. And go see The Raid.
I will do it. Thank you, sir.
You're listening to the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. Do hope you enjoyed the conversation with Dave Johnson on the program today. Right now, in the final 20 minutes or so of the program, we're going to feature a suite of music from The Dark Knight Rises, covering some of the material for Bane and Batman and Selina Kyle that we spoke about earlier in the show. Let you take a listen to it and form your own impressions of the music. Okay, let's begin. The music, of course, by Mr. Hans Zimmer. Enjoy. Thank you. music written for The Dark Knight Rises by composer Hans Zimmer. That wraps up our time together on the program today. I do hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll join us again next week for more fun on the Sounds and Sights of Cinema. Right now, we conclude with this. Have a great week, everyone. Back at you later.